Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, the legislature's Joint Finance Committee is preparing to take its first votes on Governor Tony Evers' $91 billion budget after wrapping up public hearings on the plan. The size of Wisconsin's congressional delegation will not change in the wake of the latest census, as the state remains poised to keep 8 seats in the U.S. House of Representatives.
We strongly encourage anyone who knows anything to report.
And the Wisconsin Department of Justice has launched a statewide probe into abuse allegations in the Catholic Church. Rewind, your week in review for April 30th.
I'm Brianna Riley.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This week, the legislature's powerful Joint Finance Committee wrapped up its final public hearing on Governor Tony Evers' $91 billion plan and is preparing for its first votes in the coming weeks. The Joint Finance Committee held its final public hearing on Wednesday, a virtual one. Lawmakers are now expected to take their first votes on the budget next week. Complicating things this time around is the money that the state is getting from the federal ARPA plan, the American Rescue Plan Act, that President Biden and Congress passed a couple months ago. That is the latest in federal COVID aid the state is getting. In all, the state is expected to get some $3.2 billion, and Evers said he will unveil a detailed plan to spend that money in the coming weeks. So far, he said $2.5 billion will go towards economic recovery and a few areas within that, but we haven't gotten a detailed rundown, and probably won't get one until the U.S. Treasury Department releases updated guidance on exactly how that money can be spent. In addition to those exact plans for spending that we're waiting on, for the money being spent, we are also waiting on updated revenue estimates because income tax collections were pushed back a month, giving Wisconsin residents additional time to file those. JR, in the meantime, though, in the short term, what do you see in terms of budget action in the next couple of months?
Probably, let's break it down like kind of week by week. The first few weeks, we call them cats and dogs. The Joint Finance Committee will go through and do smaller agencies, the easy lifts, which frankly is what they do every time. I mean, this isn't really a shock, all right? Probably the first thing we're going to see at some point, maybe next week, will be a list of what the Joint Finance Co-Chairs consider to be the policy in the governor's budget that they want to strip out. So, and have often said that policy is in the eye of the beholder when it comes to the budget, but expect to see things like the expansion of Medicaid, legalization of marijuana, other things like that, that they'll strip out in one fell swoop. So that'll be a big motion up front. They'll start going through these smaller agencies, and then they'll kind of lay the foundation to get to the big stuff toward the end, which they always do. Schools are always one of the last things that we do, state budget in Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin system, corrections, the big driver, Medicaid, the big drivers of spending in the state budget. Those always come toward the end as the pieces come into better focus. The thing that's different this time is typically we get those revenue estimates around May 10th-ish in odd numbered years, give or take. So you got less than a month after the filing deadline for taxes before you see that revenue estimate. If we look at May 17th now for the filing deadline, so maybe it's early June before we see some of those numbers. I get the impression talking to lawmakers that they don't need all the details to get some of the stuff done. But those final pieces, what they might do with taxes, for example. Remember, the latest COVID-19 plan for the federal government has a provision banning states accept the money from directly or indirectly cutting taxes if they accept those funds. What might that look like? We're waiting for that guidance from the feds. Expect Republicans to try at least to cut taxes and whatever they send back to the governor. But those kinds of things, the exact dollar amount of what the tax cut might be or how much schools might get, that stuff won't be really figured out until we see both the final rough outline, at least, of the governor's plan, the federal money, and those revenue estimates.
Right, and underlying all of this is the strained or perhaps non-existent relationship between Governor Evers and Republican legislative leaders. Governor Evers made some comments about that this week, JR. What did you get from those?
Essentially, they don't have a relationship. And we've talked about the show before. It's been a tense, difficult relationship from even before Evers walked in the door. Remember, Republicans in December of 2018 approved in a lame duck session a series of laws that reined in the governor's powers. That then set the tone for a very healthy working relationship. things got progressively worse through the pandemic. Everson had a staff, Evers staffer then secretly recorded a conversation involving the governor, Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, then Senator Leader Scott Fitzgerald. That didn't help things. I mean, it's just gotten progressively worse over the time they've been in office, and they really don't have much relationship. I believe the last time the three of them really talked, from what I've looked at, is in December about a COVID-19 bill. But since then, we really haven't seen any real effort on either side to kind of work together. So at this point, the governor's taking an interesting tact where he's basically going to the public saying, these guys should do my budget, without going to lawmakers and saying, how can we get my budget done? I don't know that's going to be a successful route for him with the composition of the legislature, but they don't have much of a foundation for a work relationship right now as it is.
Right, exactly. And Joint Finance Committee Democratic member Senator John Erpenbach and Governor Tony Evers sort of discussed that during a news conference on Thursday. Let's hear from them now.
So at the end of the day, the governor listened to the people. We listened to the people on the road in the Finance Committee hearings around the state and yesterday virtually. We've heard basically consistently the exact same things. And if the Republicans are listening, they'll go big. They'll take what Governor Evers has put in front of us and put Wisconsin back on the road to prosperity and opportunity, which is what we all want.
It couldn't be more clear, folks. The people of Wisconsin are ready to face the challenges this pandemic brought to the forefront and do it better going forward. The people of Wisconsin deserve what is included in this budget, and we've got to get this done. So it's either the legislature is going to listen to the people, or they're just going to ignore them. And I think that's a dangerous place for our state to be.
Wisconsin will keep its 8 House seats following the latest census. The state is one of 37 not gaining or losing a House seat based on new federal data released on Monday. From 2010 to 2020, let's look at these figures here. Wisconsin's population grew 3.6% to 5.89 million residents. That's down from the 6% growth between 2000 and 2010 that the state saw. In the meantime, over the last decade, the Midwest grew 3.1%, while national growth was 7.4%. While Wisconsin isn't gaining or losing a seat, other Midwestern neighbors are losing. Ohio, Michigan, and Illinois are all poised to lose one congressional seat. Important thing to remember is that losing or gaining seats is all about relative population change, right? In short, it doesn't matter what happens in Wisconsin or in an individual state if growth is greater elsewhere. So as long as you're above that 435 House threshold number, we're able to keep all 8 of our seats. Each of Wisconsin's congressional districts now, based on this 5.89 million figure from the Census Bureau, will include 737,000 residents going forward. That means that we'll see the Madison area 2nd congressional district, for example, shrink. But JR, what are the other implications from these figures? What are you seeing that could play out across the other congressional districts?
Well, a couple of things. Look long term. We've been on a path last few decades where we lose a seat every 30 years. We grew 3.6% this decade, 6% the one before, 9.7 the one before that. That's not a great trend. That means we're probably going to sweat out the 2031 census announcement. But for now, what we're looking at is, if you look at the map, you have to remember that for everything that you move, something else is affected. So the 2nd district, for example, it is well above, at least last count, the population of the average district is going to be like when the new map is drawn. And remember that there's allowance for some variation between the districts. They're not all going to be like 737,000 people on the nose. There'll be some differences, but they got to be pretty much in line with each other. The 2nd has got to shrink. The 4th is an interesting one because that one will have to grow. But remember, the 4th district is the Milwaukee area. There are principles in redistricting about things like minority representation, communities of interest. So the 4th is going to change dramatically because you have to keep that district kind of like the way it is with a majority-minority district. You're going to see people added to it. It'll still be an overwhelming Democratic district. Okay, from there, where do things move? The 3rd district, let's do the map, the mitten of Wisconsin, right? So let's pretend here's a 3rd district over here, here's your 2nd here, here's your 1st. The 3rd district goes along the Mississippi River in the west. If it goes farther to the east toward Madison, it gets more Democratic. If it goes farther north toward the 7th District, it gets more Republican. That impacts Ron Kind dramatically, right? Democrat from La Crosse, top target rate for 2022. Brian Stiler, Republican from Janesville. His district kind of runs from Lake Michigan over toward Janesville, dips into Waukesha County, the north. If that district spreads out and grabs more of the Democratic territory from the 2nd District, that could make Brian Stiler's life more interesting in 2022. So everything kind of shifts, and the bottom line is lawmakers will try to draw a map. It's unlikely they'll get Governor Evers to buy into the map that they want to draw. That means the courts are going to draw it. What will the courts do? What principles will they adhere to? Will they going to take a series of maps, submit it to them, and say, okay, we like this one the best? We don't know, because the Supreme Court, for example, state Supreme Court, has been asked to put a process in place to basically dictate how it handled redistricting lawsuits. The court expressed some reservations about this proposal back in January, oral arguments, basically saying, we don't draw maps, we decide controversies. So does that mean that a lawsuit in the state courts would go through the lower courts first, then the Supreme Court? Possibly. Have to wait for those decision from the court about that rules petition first. We've long assumed that Republicans would want to go to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin because it's a 4-3 conservative majority. But with the latest rulings we've had out of there, with Brian Hagedorn kind of siding with liberals on some big cases, some Republicans aren't so sure anymore about where they want to go. Democrats, we've assumed, want to go to the federal courts because a 3-judge panel just a couple of years ago declared that a map Republicans drew was an unconstitutional partisan gerrymander. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court eventually undercut that ruling, but we've assumed Democrats want to go there. They think they're getting a better hearing. It's a lot of up in the air. And oh, by the way, while we know the districts that we have, number-wise, we don't know the details to draw those districts until September 30th. The period to be circulating nomination papers is like mid-April of next year, depending on how this court case plays out. And you gotta go in your mind like, okay, they'll try and draw a map in the fall. It gets vetoed. We go to court, and so let's say September, October. Let's say October. How quickly can a court have a map in place that's probably been reviewed by a higher court before April 15th? You may have candidates who are trying to figure out in March, what seat am I running in? It's going to be really fascinating to watch the scramble if it gets to be last minute. So there are a lot of unknowns coming up, especially with the ruling from a Dane County judge this week about just legal contracts Republicans signed. So there's a whole lot of moving pieces right now, and what's really going to dictate, what could dictate the balance of power in the Capitol for a while.
Yeah, and to flesh out that ruling a little bit, a Dane County judge ruled that two contracts that Republican leaders, Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu, struck with private attorneys, taxpayer-funded contracts, are void. I mean, Voss has said that he's planning on appealing that ruling, so we'll see that play out throughout the courts as it gets appealed up and up. But do you think, JR, is sort of going back to the redistricting process? Obviously, we're still waiting on that final localized data, which won't come until the fall. But based on the numbers we've seen in terms of the state's population and what we know about sort of the relative size of each of these congressional districts, do we have any early sense of what assembly and Senate seats will look like? Will we have to add, you know, a Madison area assembly seat or you know, because of these population shifts?
There are three places in Wisconsin that are growing rapidly: Dane County, the Fox Valley, and St. Croix County, which is basically becoming a suburb of Minneapolis, right? Everything else is kind of just treading water. Dane County already has a good number of seats that touch the county one way or another. Likely going to squeeze at least part of a new assembly seat into that area. Again, for everything that you change, you would impact somebody else. So it's hard to see how those puzzle pieces fit together to start kind of putting it really together on paper. But likely, you're going to see a little bit more of Dane County in the assembly. We'll see. The Fox Valley, those seats are going to change a little bit. And over in St. Croix County, if you think about what's happened in recent elections in Wisconsin, we've seen Democrats really doing really well in urban areas, Republicans really well in rural areas. That's going to continue, in part because the urban areas are growing population-wise, and it happens to be Democrats moving there and swelling their numbers. But you can still see a map that you can pack Democrats into those urban districts with the way the rules work. So even though Democrats won Wisconsin in 2020, the presidential race, even though they've had growth in Democratic areas, you can still see a very healthy Republican majority in the assembly map because of where Democrats live versus where Republicans live at this next round of redistricting.
Moving on from redistricting, let's move on to our next topic. Attorney General Josh Call announced a statewide probe into clergy abuse. The inquiry announced on Tuesday will be conducted by the Wisconsin Department of Justice and is currently limited to abuse allegations in the Catholic Church. Some two dozen other states have investigated decades of sexual abuse perpetuated by Catholic clergy and others in the church. In the legislature, lawmakers have rejected efforts to abolish time limits for when childhood sex assault victims can bring civil suits against alleged perpetrators or institutions. This is now not the first big announcement from Call in recent weeks, right? A few weeks ago, he also announced that the Department of Justice has secured grant funding and is going to be creating its own statewide sexual assault kit tracker, which is something that the legislature, lawmakers, have sought to direct the Department of Justice to do. But despite the fact that that was a bipartisan effort last session and it's been brought back this session, last session that stalled amid some some partisan fighting in the state assembly. Jer, what do you make of these two big announcements and sort of a bit of a go-it-alone approach from the DOJ at this point?
Well, one, with the clergy abuse investigation, the intersection of politics and religion is always a dangerous place to be. So you have to watch how Call navigates that. That's going to be interesting to see how a very sensitive topic and how he goes through it. Two, with the rape test kit tracker, it's a move by Call to try and create what he can. The issue is he can't compel local law enforcement to participate in this tracker that he's creating with this grant. So the argument with DOJ, it continues to be they need the legislation to compel participation in this effort. And look, the backlog rape test kits has plagued DOJ for years and years. That was an issue in past races. It was an issue when Call beat Brad Schimmel, the former Republican Attorney General. Call does not want to have that become an issue again in 2022. He's going to do what he can to try and avoid that. And there's speculation in the Capitol that part of the reason why that bill's not getting done is because Assembly GOP leadership is not willing to give Call a quote-unquote win on a bill that would be important to one of his campaign pledges, campaign issues he ran on in 2018. So the bill was assigned to a different committee than last session in the Assembly. I still have not seen it last check assigned to or get a public hearing. So just keep an eye on that to see if actually anything gets done with that bill this session, which had overwhelming support in the Senate. I think it passed it unanimously or pretty close to it, and did last time as well.
That's right, and there's a second accompanying bill with it as well that is also up in the air. So we'll keep an eye on both of those going forward. Now let's turn to a video from Attorney General Josh Call, who spoke at the Capitol this week to announce the probe.
The Wisconsin Department of Justice takes sexual assault very seriously, and we've worked in several ways to strengthen Wisconsin's response to that violent crime. And during my time as Attorney General, I've heard from some of the many people whose lives have been impacted by clergy and faith leader abuse. I know there are survivors, friends and family members of survivors, and supporters of survivors who've waited for years for a fair and independent review of clergy and faith leader abuse in Wisconsin. And that's what we are announcing today. The Wisconsin Department of Justice will be leading an independent statewide inquiry into clergy and faith leader abuse in order to provide victims, their families, and anyone with knowledge of faith leader and clergy abuse with a safe and trusted place to report to a trained victim services specialist. We're conducting this review to get greater accountability and to promote healing for victims. And we're conducting this review to improve the response to abuse and hopefully to prevent future cases of abuse.
Election season continues in Wisconsin. Governor Tony Evers has announced a special election in the 37th Assembly District. The seat previously held by now State Senator John Jagler is vacant following his election to the 13th SD. Evers scheduled the general election for July 13th and the primary for June 15th. Already, a half dozen Republican candidates have announced campaigns to represent the district, which former President Trump won by more than 10 points in November. Jagler, I should note, was formally sworn in last week, and Representative Elijah Banky, who won the special for the 89th Assembly District, succeeding former Representative John Nygren, was sworn in on Wednesday. JR, you've followed this race more closely than I have. Do you expect to see more candidates get into this election?
I think we're getting close to having the field set. A couple of questions that I have, though, are, you know, with a June 15th primary and a heavy Republican seat, what advantages each Republican candidate bring to that primary? Bankey's a great example. He was not the top spender in that primary in the 88th Assembly District, but he just plain outworked the other candidate in a multi-candidate field, just outworked the others. Is there a candidate among this half dozen who has the time and energy to outwork the others and also run a targeted campaign? Because when you're talking about turnout June 15th for a primary, you got to target who you're talking to. You don't go talk to the casual voter. You talk to the hardcore Republican voter who turns out every time. You go after that person because you know that he or she will show up. For Democrats, the interesting question is, do you make a play for this seat? It's not a great one from the numbers. It's not going to change the balance of power in the Assembly. So if you win, great. If you lose, you're expected to. Is it worth the investment? They don't have a candidate announced yet. We're less than 3 weeks out from the filing deadline for nomination papers. So are they going to play? If they play, they have to make a targeted effort in places like Watertown, DeForest, which are your population centers. Try and find those hardcore Democrats who are going to turn out even in July for an election and see if they can get enough of those people to polls to overcome the GOP tilt of that district. It's not an easy task, and I don't know if they'll put a heavy effort into it, but we've seen Democrats win heavily Republican seat special elections before. We saw in the Jaguar race that Senate seat, it was closer than expected, like only 7 points, in a district that Trump won by 15 or 18, something like that, 20, somewhere in that neck of the woods. So there's always a chance in a special election, but there's not a huge payoff for Democrats if they go for it, because it's not going to change the dynamic in the Assembly overall.
Right. And for context, Republicans in the Assembly hold 60 seats, Democrats hold 38, and there's one vacancy, which will obviously be filled following this July special. Moving on now to stocks. What's rising this week, JR?
The ad wars. If you're seeing political ads on TV and wondering why, it's because the season never ends anymore, essentially. What's really interesting is, you know, we've seen ads targeting Ron Kind and Ron Johnson, which makes sense, right? They're canceled in 2022. It's an opportunity to soften them up a little bit ahead of the election. We're also seeing a concerted effort by Democrats to praise Joe Biden and the latest stimulus package that he signed. What I've noted about that, talking to people, is that Democrats feel like they learned a lesson after 2009. President Obama signed a stimulus package to help get the economy back on track following the Great Recession. Republicans quickly seized on it as a wasteful package of spending and defined it, and Democrats didn't really do anything to fight that narrative. It rolled right from that into the Affordable Care Act into a wave election in 2010 for Republicans. So Democrats are saying, okay, we're not going to let that happen again. The package is popular right now. They're going to keep pumping it up, these ads. The latest one now is from a 501c3 that was created to support Joe Biden's basically policies, announced a $3 million TV campaign in five TV and digital campaign in five states, including Wisconsin, TV out of Milwaukee, digital ads running statewide. They're not going to allow Republicans to define that package. They're going to try and do it on their own. Another thing to note is a lot of these ads are digital. They're very cheap to produce. They're easy to target. And you spend money to raise money, essentially. So, yeah, it's kind of odd to be running ads in the spring of an off year, but you're keeping your base engaged. You're getting them to send donations. You're filling volunteer shifts. And the reality is it's the way it is. It's a constant churn in politics. And Wisconsin has been in this churn, it seems like, for a decade. Some good news, possibly for you who need a break. After the special election in July, we will go without a statewide election until November of 2022, so a break in the spring. They'll sell local races in the ballot next April.
There's some hope on the horizon, then, for a break a break from all of this. What's mixed this week, JR?
So Mike Grebe. So he's vice president of the Board of Regents. He made clear in an interview with Wisconsin Public Radio this week he's going to run for president, which that's a normal succession, right? You serve as vice president, you become president, that happens all the time. What's interesting is he's running for president as a Walker appointee at a time when Evers appointees will now comprise a majority of those appointed to the board. Now remember, the head of the tech college system and DPI are automatically on the board, but up until today, it's been an 8-8 split among the appointees. Starting in May, Evers just announced today three appointments. One is a student appointment, which replaces his first student appointment. One's a reappointment of John Miller, And the third is a pick that replaces a Walker appointee. Now you're talking a 9-7 structure with the board of Evers appointees. There's a little bit of intrigue here because last month at a board meeting, they talked about whether to have a public vote about the next board president or a private vote, a secret vote. If you think about it, if it's a public vote, you'll see where everybody lands. Number two, if it's a private one, if you're a Walker appointee who doesn't really want Grebe president, you would have cover to vote for somebody else. If you're an Evers appointee who wants to vote for Grebe, you'd have cover. Also, will there be a challenger to Grebe? I mean, the discussion from last month suggests there will be. There's no guarantee of that, but it's a complicated picture for the natural succession of vice president to president that you got to watch. Now, the president has limited powers. He or she directs the board's agenda and has a lot to say with that. But the real power might be who's appointed to lead the next president search. Remember, Tommy, they had a failed search a year ago when they picked the Alaskan president, assistant president to come here. He pulled out. They went to Tommy Thompson as an interim. The next search, find a full-time president. Who's that going to be led by? That president will appoint the person leading it. Grebe's hinted he'd point an Evers appointee to lead that search process. That might be more important to some people than who's president, because who the president of the university is a bigger deal than who's leading the board.
And if it is contested, how important do you think, you know, an Evers appointee getting support from some of these Walker appointees is for this transition period?
Well, it could have a lot to do with, like, think about Tommy Thompson. He's enjoying right now working with a kind of a bipartisan atmosphere on that board. If it becomes more contentious and split, yeah, that might impact whether he wants to stick around. Obviously, you got to think about whether Tommy Thompson would be a candidate for the full-time appointment. They do this next search process. There are all kinds of, like, back stuff to watch. If you're kind of a geek about the University of Wisconsin system, that it could be a consequential election for the next 5 to 10 years. Because remember, presidents have served, I think, like, Ray Cross was like 6 years, Kevin Riley was like 9, Catherine Lyle was 12, something like that. So that president of the system is a big deal, and this race for president of the regents is going to play out against that big decision coming up for the board.
Mm-hmm. What's following this week?
So Ron Kind, look, there was a story in Fox News Digital about Kind getting income from a building he owns from renting a massage parlor. Now, there are a couple red flags about the story. Number one, it has all the hallmarks of an opposition research dump. The person who wrote it is a former Republican staffer on the Hill, Capitol Hill, working now at Fox. There are a couple of questions about some of the reporting, but the bottom line is it got into the ether. Local media picked it up, advanced the story, got comment from Kind. And look, it's sad to say, but I don't know necessarily if the facts matter in this case. There's no explicit reporting yet that the massage parlor did anything wrong. There's some innuendo about it, but that doesn't matter. All that matters is the headline, because this is all about the attack next fall against Ron Kind and what could be a close race. And that's the reality of what happens anymore with this interplay of media and politics, where they're trying to get stories out with sometimes friendly media outlets to get them into the mainstream media and then get them in that ad. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is this. We talked about just a little while ago. If Ron Kind's district gets better for him on the numbers, this all might be for naught. If it gets any worse, he may have the perfect answer to this story and other stories that come after him in the next year and a half, and it may not matter because the district could be somewhat Republican. He may be, of the all 8 members of the congressional district, he's likely the most redistricting contingent for his future. It could go dramatically differently either way, depending on whether that seat moves a little bit toward Madison or a little bit farther north. And so you just got to watch it. No, this also could be a shot across the bow for Kind. I've heard some Republican chatter like, oh, maybe he'll just retire like Dave Obie did back in 2010. Talking to Democrats, I don't think that's really an issue with Ron Kind. That maybe he'd run for U.S. Senate if this got too bad for him, but he's not just going to walk away. But this is a sign of what's going to come. It's going to be an ugly race. If it is one of these top 3 or 4 seats in play, it's going to get ugly. This is just an opening salvo in that contest in 2022.
Thanks for that rundown, JR, and thanks everyone for watching. I'm Brianna Riley.
And I'm JR Ross.
And that's Rewind for April 30th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. the Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.